Chapter 10. It was nearly noon when we left the Banshee's castle. We started out by following the row of pine trees that she'd mentioned. Stone markers showed that an old road had once run beside them, but it had long since fallen into disuse and was mostly overgrown. Because we still couldn't find anything to eat, we continued walking long after we normally would have stopped. When darkness fell and the pine trees melted into the rest of the forest, we asked Lil for help. She was happy to lead us and flew off to look around. The night was well along when we reached the village that Lil had found, making the few candles still burning in the windows a welcome sight. Grouped around a small central field, a cluster of narrow houses with steeply pitched roofs had been built so close to each other that they seemed to present a united front to the surrounding forest. Only a narrow gap separated the houses, leaving barely enough room for two people to walk side by side. "I hope there's an inn here," said Edric, "and I hope they're still serving supper." I yawned and brushed my hair out of my eyes. "And I hope they have some rooms available after we've eaten."
"I hope they have a nice bucket of water," Shelton said from inside my sleeve. "And maybe a little salt to add to it."
"I'll see you later," said Lil. "I don't like inns. There are always too many people there who like to hit bats."
After walking the length of the path that led between the houses without seeing an inn or anyone to talk to, Edric declared, "We're not sleeping outside tonight. This village is too close to the Troll's Mountain. Anything could be in these woods." Picking the closest house, he rapped on the door with his knuckles. The thump was so loud in the otherwise silent night that I was sure everyone in the village must have heard it. I gasped when a man stepped out of the shadows only a few feet away.
"May I help you?"
he asked with an odd accent to his words. The light from the windows did little more than outline his shape in the gloom, and I couldn't help but feel uneasy.
"We're seeking lodging for the night," said Edric, stepping between me and the man. "Is there an inn close by?"
The man chuckled, but it wasn't a pleasant sound.
"No inns that you could reach tonight. However, I have some empty rooms that I let out to travelers. Will it be just the two of you?"
"Yes," said Edric, placing his hand on Ferdy's hilt. Apparently I wasn't the only one who felt ill at ease around the stranger.
"And if we could arrange for supper as well?"
"Of course," said the man. "I'm sure my wife can come up with something."
I took Edric's hand as the man led us to the largest house in the village. As narrow as the others, it was two stories tall with a pair of windows on the upper floor that looked out over the street. Despite the candles flickering in the windows, it didn't look as if anyone were home. I drew back when the door opened to a dank, earthy smell that seemed out of place indoors.
"Are you all right?"
whispered Edric as he tucked my arm in his.
"Yes,"
I said, "but this house..."
"Right this way,"
said the man, leading us into the large front room. A table had been set with two trenchers and two mugs, as if we'd been expected. I looked around, thinking we were alone in the silent house, and was surprised to see a grizzled old man watching us from the corner by the hearth.
"My neighbor, Humphrey,"
said our host, who I could now see was fair-haired with pale skin and piercing blue eyes. There was a whisper of sound, and a young woman with the same coloring stepped into the doorway of another room.
"And this is my wife, Suli. She'll see to your needs. My name is Corbin. Please sit. Suli will have your supper ready soon."
With a nod to his wife, the man disappeared out the front door. We took our seats as the woman set a pitcher of ale on the table.
"I'll have the food ready in just a minute," she said. "Drink plenty of this nice stout ale. It builds up the blood."
"Aye, that it does," said Humphrey as Suli left the room.
That ale is good for you. I've had my fair share over the years, and I'm still here.
He laughed when he said this, as if at a private joke.
Where do you hail from?
He asked, wiping his eyes. I'm from Greater Greensward. Wondering if I should tell him about Edric, I glanced across the table and knew right away that my prince wasn't going to be any help. He was downing his ale as if he hadn't had anything to drink in days and didn't seem to be paying attention to anything else. It wasn't until the young woman set clay bowls in front of us that Edric looked up.
Here you go, said Sully. This'll put meat on your bones and thicken your blood.
Looks good, doesn't it? Said Humphrey.
But he was looking at me, not the food. The bowls held a thick stew filled with some kind of meat and chunks of vegetables. I'd given up eating meat after I'd turned into an animal the first time, but I was too hungry to go without eating anything. Swallowing the chunks of carrots and potatoes as fast as I could, I tried not to think about their meat-soaked flavor. Edric, however, had no such problem. After finishing his stew, he reached for what remained of mine. While he ate, I chanced to look around the room and caught the old man watching me. I fidgeted under his gaze until Edric had scraped my bowl clean.
Edric, I said under my breath, perhaps we could see about those bedchambers now?
Sully had already left the room, but Humphrey must have heard me, because he called to the young woman, saying,
They want to go to bed.
Of course you do,
she said to us, wiping her hands on her apron as she came out of the room in the back.
You must be tired after such a long walk. I'm sure you won't have any problem falling asleep.
How do you know we walked a long way? Edric asked, quirking an eyebrow.
Because everywhere is a long way from here,
Sully replied, laughing.
Now, if you'll follow me?
Edric glanced at the empty bowls. I wasn't finished eating. Sully shrugged, saying,
I am sorry, but that's all there is. We weren't expecting company.
Then, turning to me, she added,
Your lad has a hearty appetite. I like that in a man.
Humphrey laughed again, and I could feel his gaze on my back as I started up the creaky stairs. He'd made me uncomfortable, although I couldn't say why, so I was relieved when we reached the landing and the old man could no longer see us. There were four doors on the second floor, and Sully showed us to two of them. Neither of the rooms was very big. Edric gave me the larger one, but was soon back, knocking on my door. I let him in, wondering what he could have to say now when he hadn't spoken a word during supper. I think you should come to the other room, he said. Its window is small and has a shutter on it. The bed will be easier to move, too. Do you want to trade rooms? I asked, not sure what he was saying. Not at all. I'll stay there, too. I think I can defend it better if it comes to that.
Defend?
I said. What makes you think you'll need to?
Because something's not quite right about this place. Did you notice that there are no roads going in or out? And I think it's odd that ordinary people would want to live so close to the Trolls Mountain. I wouldn't be surprised if they have some sort of agreement worked out with the Troll Queen. Maybe they tell her about everyone who's passing through, or maybe they turn them over to the trolls in exchange for their own safety. Those stories about trolls killing travelers are true, you know.
And you think shutters would keep us safe? I asked. Edric shrugged.
They're better than nothing.
Fine, I said. But I get the bed. All I want is a good night's sleep. We were about to leave the room when Lil flew in through the open window.
There you are,
she said, landing on my shoulder. She was out of breath, and I could feel her little heart pounding. What have you been up to? I asked, following Edric from the room.
I was looking for bats, said Lil. I just wanted to meet them and ask if they knew anything about the Troll Queen. The whole village smells like them, but I couldn't find a single one.
That's odd, I said. Where do you think they went?
I don't know. That's why I was looking for so long. This is a nice room,
she said as we stepped into the other chamber.
It reminds me of a cave.
Yeah, said Edric. Me too. The room was small and dark, with one tiny window and a narrow bed. It was situated over the room where we'd eaten, and I could hear people talking below us. I closed the shutters, Edric continued. I'm going to push the bed in front of the door to block it.
Why?
Asked Lil.
What are you afraid of?
Edric thinks the people in the village might have told the trolls about us, I replied.
Really?
Lil fluttered to the window and landed on the sill.
Then we should take turns watching.
The little bat shuffled from one side to the other, peering through the cracks in the shutters. I helped Edric move the bed. We were shoving it against the door when a clock somewhere in the village chimed midnight. Did you hear that? I asked.
You mean the clock? Said Edric.
No, what came after it. They were talking downstairs, but they stopped when the clock chimed. They didn't stop when it chimed before. Wait. I held up one finger to silence him, listened for a moment, and said, Humphrey just said, it's time. But he didn't say what it was time for. Edric looked puzzled.
How can you hear that?
I needed to talk to a butterfly a few days ago, so I had to have extra sharp hearing.
Uh-huh, said Edric. I believe that, coming from you. Maybe when he said, it's time, he meant it was time to go to bed.
I cocked my head to listen. The stairs creaked as someone climbed them, just as they had for us. Maybe, except the creaking grew louder and I could hear a difference. There are more people now, at least 5 or 6.
Would you look at that?
Lil said, peering out the window again.
All those people are coming this way.
I edged past the bed to peek out the crack in the shutters. It was true. The doors of the village had been thrown open, and everyone was heading toward the house where we were staying.
Psst, Emma,
whispered Edric.
Look at that.
I turned away from the window. Someone was on the other side of the door trying to push it open, but it barely moved an inch before smacking into the bed. Whatever you do, I told Edric, don't open the door. I have a bad feeling about this. Whoever was on the other side hesitated, then tapped on the door and said in a pleasant voice,
It's me, Corbin. I've come to see if you need more blankets. Just ask me in and I'll give them to you.
We're fine, I said. The night is warm.
I've brought you another candle as well.
We don't need another candle. We'll be going to sleep soon, I said.
Then open the door and we can have a nice chat about what you'd like for breakfast.
Maybe we should, said Edric.
Don't you dare move,
I spat at him, then called to our host. There's no need. Whatever you normally make would be fine. Something scrabbled at the shutters, sounding like a mouse in the walls.
Emma, said Lil, I think you'd better see this.
What is it now? I muttered, bending down to peer out the crack again. I couldn't see at first because something was in the way. Then it moved, and the moonlight showed me a man floating in midair, poking ineffectually at the shutters. There were other people there as well, people who would have seemed normal if they hadn't been floating outside a second-floor window.
Are those people supposed to have teeth like that?
Lil whispered, peering out the shutter beside me.
Only if they're vampires,
I whispered back. They were fangs, not teeth, really, and they looked out of place on the middle-aged woman and the little girl who leered at the shutters as if they knew we were watching from inside.
Come join us, called the woman. We'll have a party and you'll be the guests of honor.
I bet, I muttered, and then I turned to my friends. Don't worry. We're safe in here. Garrod told me that vampires can't come in unless they're invited. Just don't open the door or the window. We'll be able to leave in the morning when they go to sleep.
Some of them are bats, Lil said. Or at least they are now.
A cool, dank vapor filtered into the room through the shutters. I peeked out again.
Sure enough, there were bats outside flying side by side with the floating vampires. I was still watching when there was another puff of cool, dank air, and a little old lady with a kindly face turned into a bat. Corbin, or whoever was on the other side of the door, started knocking loudly, demanding to be invited in. Edric faced the door with his arms crossed and his legs braced as if awaiting the onslaught of an army. Convinced that no one was about to come through that door, I turned back to the window in time to see Lil struggling to open it.
"What are you doing?" I said, slapping the shutter closed again. "Didn't you see him? Garrett has come looking for me. I have to go to him."
I shook my head and bent down to take a peek. "That's not possible. How could he be here?"
"Did she say that Garrett's here?" asked Edric. "We could use another strong arm. Maybe we should let him in."
I turned back to Edric in disbelief. "Another strong arm that happens to belong to a vampire? I don't think so. He may be Lil's mate, but do you really think he'd side against a village full of..."
"Lil, wait, what are you doing?"
In the moment that I'd had my back turned, Lil had pulled the shutter open enough that she could squeeze her tiny body through. As I watched in horror, she darted into the night sky and was lost in a flurry of bat wings and jubilant voices.
"Lil!"
I cried out, but she was gone. And back again in an instant with a familiar bat in tow. It was Garrett. If I hadn't been a bat before myself, I never would have recognized him, but I'd learned to tell the difference on more than one frosty night excursion. Garrett was a particularly handsome bat, just as he was an exceedingly handsome man.
"Emma, quick!"
shouted Lil.
"Let us in!"
I couldn't lose my little friend, not after all we'd been through together. So I opened the window just wide enough to let her in, and in came a flood of bats, all of them vampires except one. Two bats whispered sweet nothings into each other's ears. The rest came straight for Edric and me.
"What the?"
shouted Edric as a cloud of bats covered him from head to toe. I could see him fighting them off as a similar wave knocked me away from the window, against the bed, then down to the floor. My first thought was that Garrett had betrayed us. The second was that I'd have to use magic to save my Edric. I was holding my arms in front of my throat, trying to fend off their fangs while furiously working on a spell, when a voice shouted,
"Off them! They are my friends!"
And all the bats fell away. It was suddenly so quiet in the room that I could hear Edric's ragged breath as I tried to catch my own. I sat up, jerking my hand away when it touched the leathery skin of a bat. Then a firm grip enclosed my fingers, and Garrett the man was helping me to my feet.
"Sorry about that," he said before turning to Edric. "It didn't occur to me that they'd follow me, but you know how it goes. Invite one vampire in and they think it means everyone's welcome."
"Then it wasn't a trick?" I asked.
"Emma, how could you?" cried Lil. "Garrett would never do such a thing. He came looking for me."
Lil, Garrett said, scratching his head and looking sheepish. "I didn't know you were here. It wasn't until I heard your voice that I knew it was you."
"Then why are you here?"
she asked, fluttering to the bed.
"I bet I know. You were visiting friends and heard my voice and came to protect me. That was it, wasn't it?"
"Actually, I arrived only a few minutes ago. I was delayed at my last stop. That was family business, too, just like this. As the oldest member of the family, I have to give my permission before anyone can marry, so I stop by every few months to see if anyone is engaged. It's a tradition, you understand, but tradition is very important when you live as long as we do."
"You mean these people are your relatives?" I asked. Garrett nodded.
"On my mother's side. Second cousins, six times removed. That kind of thing."
"Why didn't you tell me?"
Lil asked.
"I would have loved to have come with you."
Garrett looked even more sheepish than before.
"It didn't occur to me. I've been making the rounds for hundreds of years, and I've never had a wife to bring before."
"A wife!"
shouted one of the bats. There was another puff of dank air, and the bat turned into the grizzled old man who had sat beside us at supper.
Why didn't you send word that you had married? We'd about given up hope that you ever would. And what is your name, young lady?
He asked, extending his hand to Lil. Lil looked flustered at first, then pulled her wings close to her body. I could tell she was upset.
I'm not a young lady. I'm a bat,
she said in a tiny voice. The old man looked surprised at first, but he quickly recovered himself and smiled down at where she sat on the bed.
And a beautiful bat, too, he told Lil. I must say, Garrett, you've found yourself a lovely wife.
I know I have, said Garrett. But thank you for saying so. And now, I'd like to invite you all to an unexpectedly joyous celebration. I want you to have the chance to meet my wife and our dear friends Prince Edric and Princess Emeralda.
All the vampires in the room began to talk at once, excited at the prospect of a party, even if it didn't involve drinking our blood.
You'll have to tell me later why you're here, he told me. I know it wasn't because you were looking for me.
I will, I said. Although you'll have to excuse us from your celebration. You're used to staying up, but we have to leave in the morning. All I want to do now is sleep for the rest of the night undisturbed.
We'll see what we can arrange, he said, smiling down at me.
A short time later, Edric and I were in the room that was supposed to have been mine. While he slept on the floor with Ferdy by his side, I lay curled up in the bed, sleeping peacefully, with Shelton keeping watch from my pillow. Boards had been nailed over the window, and on the door hung a sign that read, "No one is welcome, so do not disturb."